Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Visit wholefoodsmarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more and find the store nearest to you.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to The Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. Our guest is John Peterson, wine director of the Frankie Spontino Restaurant Group. We'll talk to John about the life of a somm, wine, casual dining, and a lot more. We'll taste a 10-year-old Chianti Reserva, see how that's holding up for our weekly wine sip. And John said he snuck a bottle in, so we'll talk about that. I'm your host, Sam Ben Ruby. Stay with us for The Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. Alabama-born John Peterson made his way to New York, arriving on the scene not too long ago. He cut his teeth at Craft Bar, Nomad, and now as wine director at Frankie Spontino Group. John shares his time between Brooklyn and the West Village, overseeing and curating an interesting and eclectic list of wines to complement equally eclectic menus. When you ask John to what to serve with fish, his answer is usually weed, but we'll explain that later. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in.
Of course.
I want our audience to get a little sense of who you are and where you came from. So like I ask all my guests, tell me about your journey in life, wine, and restaurants that got you, thank God, from Alabama to New York and Frankie's, where you are right now. So give me a quick glide through that.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Alabama, like you said. My parents were in the restaurant business for a little over 10 years. So worked with them, got my feet wet, if you will. Did the natural progression, left high school, went to college, and landed in Charleston, South Carolina.
Great restaurant town.
Amazing restaurant town. Worked in some places there, both in the front of house and as well as the kitchen.
While you were a student?
Both while I was a student and then stuck around afterwards.
Were you in the hospitality school?
Yep, so I graduated with a business degree in hospitality, okay. Which was awesome. So I worked at McCrady's for a little bit.
Top of the list.
Yeah, that was amazing. And then also worked in the kitchen and then did some catering gigs as well. And then decided one day that it was time to leave, and I called a friend and I was like, let's go to New York tomorrow, literally. And so we drove up, and then I decided not to come home.
What's the moment when you want to leave? You realized you outgrew Charleston, you want more, you were curious about New York?
Yeah, it wasn't so much that I outgrew it, because I love Charleston. I could stay there. I could even see myself maybe like retiring there if that ever happens. But, you know, it's a small town, so if you want to grow and you want more and you want to try something else, the logical answer is to leave. And if you want to work in wine, in my opinion, and you want to start somewhere, New York is the place to go. It's the city where literally options are endless, especially in this industry. So I decided
it was gonna
fill
in one blank for me.
Yeah.
Because we're up to the point where you were in Charleston, graduated with hospitality, worked in restaurants, decided to come to New York. From that point backwards, where was the wine exposure or, you know, wine liking?
Right. So my sophomore year of college, I studied abroad in Florence, Italy. It was never really the best student. Wasn't really into school, but wine just, it clicked. So I took I took a wine class while I studied abroad, and everything just started to kind of make sense. I enjoyed studying wine for the historical content, and then, of course, tasting it. is always fun. But then I realized that when we were tasting and we were talking, things like I could relate a little bit to it. So that's when it clicked. I went back home, worked with my parents in their restaurant, focusing on wine and on front of house.
When you came back, were you more focused on wine? Like, let's ratchet the program up?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's very, not that there's anything wrong with it, but Alabama is very much driven by wine journalism, Wine Spectator, Robert Parker, et cetera. So that is what I cut my teeth on a lot. That was what was really around.
Not a lot of exploration or...
No. The Chablis didn't exist. Burgundy really didn't
exist. Ratings driven by what they read.
Yeah, right? Totally. So that was kind of what kind of lit the fire, I guess you could say. And then working with Clint at McCrady's is what just kept driving that. And then I realized, I want to do this for sure.
So McCrady's had an amazing list.
Yeah.
I mean, as good as anywhere and great for Charleston.
Yeah,
too.
Totally. Yeah.
So you got exposed to that. All right. So you decide to come to New York and...
Yeah, so I didn't
no
really,
job in place?
No.
It just came up?
I literally had a suitcase and clothes for four seasons, and that was about it. So I reached out to a friend of mine who was working for a distribution company here. She introduced me to some people and kind of made some connections, and then I finally was introduced to Hayden Felice, who was the GM wine director at Craft Bar. He hired me as
Tom
a server.
Palicchio.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, a top operation.
Totally. And that was a lot of fun. That was a good learning experience. So I stayed there for a little over 3 years and started as a server and left as the wine director. So, yeah.
So then
it was time to move on. I wanted to push myself in a different direction, get rid of the management aspect of working and focus on being a sommelier, focus on service, and I joined the team at Nomad as a sommelier with Thomas, which was...
Thomas Petuzic?
Thomas Pastuzac.
Pastuzac.
That's the one.
That's the one.
So, from a wine tasting and service perspective, that was, without question, the best year I've had. You taste literally everything from Pet Nat to DRC and Montfortino and all the wines that you read about when you're getting into wine.
So Nomad is part of the 11 Madison Group.
Yeah,
Daniel
Made Nice.
Hammond, Will Guidera, Made
yep.
Nice. Just quickly, the differentiation between a Nomad and 11 Madison. It was pretty high dining and high service.
Yeah, absolutely.
But not different.
Yeah.
Not more casual, just different presentation. How would you describe that?
Yeah, you know, the kind of mission statement, I guess, if you will, of Nomad is kind of that perfect intersection of uptown and downtown.
Right.
And it really is that if you work there and you see the clientele that come in, the style of service, you know, they're very influenced and inspired by music. Both, you know, 11 Madison Park has Miles Davis and
right.
Nomad has Rolling Stones. And
right.
If you think about if you're a music nerd and that kind of makes a little bit of sense to you, you can really see they have two different identities. So
right.
Nomad, it's not a tasting menu. It's fun. You can come in jeans if you want to do and drink crazy wine. Whereas 11 Madison Park is, and I didn't work at 11 Madison Park, but it's that more formal tasting
right.
menu.
Does a tasting menu limit what kind of wines you could serve or recommend or not really?
I mean, I think it depends on the individual. I've never worked in a restaurant that only did a tasting menu.
Right.
I personally, it's not the way that I like to dine so much anymore.
I agree.
It's you know, it's really fun to
do. I mean, a couple times a year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, of course.
But, right. Not, and you'd be miserable if you did that every
yeah,
night.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, hey, some people love it, and God bless them, but...
Right. So
yeah.
At Nomad, you even up the game service-wise, exposure to more wines.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great organization, mm-hmm. the Made Nice people. You do that for, what, about a year, you
yeah,
said?
I was there, like, right at a year. And
then what happens?
I was introduced to the Franks, Frank Castronovo, Frank Falsinelli. And I talked to them over about a six-week period, and then they offered me the job to come on as their wine director for the company. And it was not a position that really existed before. What really struck with me was, A, they're cool dudes, and I like to hang out with them, and I really respect them, and they've clearly done an outstanding job of creating, I think, institutions. But they really believe that in order to have a good restaurant from start to finish, to have the whole package, you have to have a real wine program.
Right.
And a real wine program doesn't mean 1,000 selections and 25 sommeliers, but
well thought out.
Yeah, it means that there's somebody that's thinking about what's being put on the wine list, and there's thought and there's education. And,
right.
And,
so two things.
Yeah.
When you got there, were there the three restaurants, Frankie's in the West Village,
yep.
Frankie's Brooklyn, and Prime Meats?
Yep.
Okay. And when you got there, was the wine program a shell of what it is now? Not bad? Needed to be upped?
They're very different. They were much smaller.
Okay.
The way that they were structured was very different. I quite literally gutted the programs.
So you put your mark on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the process of doing that isn't exactly quick, but I tried to do it as quick as I could. And I think it took about 6 months to a year to really get
them. That's pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, that's super quick. I think it really takes a sommelier about a year to kind of figure out what they're doing when you're buying wine.
So you got there in 2015, early in the year. So mm-hmm. you're going on...
Yeah, 3 years February. Yeah.
And the group started around 04.
Yep.
So they had been around a while.
Yeah, Frankie's in Brooklyn was, a restaurant in Carroll Gardens before Carroll Gardens was Carroll Gardens.
Right.
Yeah. And now it's, people come from all parts of the city.
It's a curious neighborhood. It's cool.
But I love it. Yeah. I really love
it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You guys have made your mark there. All right. So I want to get into your head a little.
Please.
I mean, to me, you're the true sommelier. I mean, you redesigned a program. You work with some cool guys. You're at multiple locations. Each location varies. I'm curious, and I think our audience would be curious, about the day in the life of a real New York sommelier. And I've never asked, I do the wine list every week, but I don't want to ask everybody that. So I got a bunch of questions because I'm curious, and I'm sure everyone else is.
Sure.
All right, so the first question is, normal week, mm-hmm. how many hours are you working?
Oh, God, I have no idea. I don't even keep track. I go into
it work. Ain't 10, and it's not 100. So give me a number in between.
No, I don't.
Are you
at least 60?
Okay.
At most,
You have a day off?
I'm off on the weekends.
Okay.
But, when you're off, you're still not really off.
Okay. That's unusual that you're off on the weekends.
Well, it's different when you're running three places and there's a lot of administration work that goes into the job. Unfortunately, it's not all being on the floor.
That's my next question.
Yeah.
So my next question is, how much of what you do is off the floor?
A lot.
Like administrative work, ordering wine, paperwork?
A lot. I start
half the job?
Probably more than that.
Okay. So you're there during the day?
I go in at 9 a.m. every day.
And on a typical day, what time would you go home?
It depends. If I'm lucky, let's, 8 o'clock.
Okay. Once the dinner serving is up and going.
Yeah, and I'm not on the floor every single night.
Right.
It's not always necessary. I have a really good team in the restaurants, so there is somebody that does that helps me with the beverage program at each place. So what I try to keep in mind is that myself or them are available and on the floor almost 7 nights a week.
Right.
It's not always that easy, but that's what we go for. Now going into the fall season, I'll probably be on the floor more because it's a lot more fun. It's a lot busier.
Summer, people are away.
Yeah, especially in Carroll Gardens. Carroll Gardens is a neighborhood. It's not like Flatiron or Midtown.
Right.
There's...
All right, so tell me, as a wine guy, how much wine do you taste outside of the floor? So, you have a crew.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you mentor and taste.
Sure.
You have distributors and wine guys.
Yeah.
How much, do you devote certain days of the week? Are you tasting? How much wine are you tasting?
Yeah, I try to taste at least once or twice with a distributor every day.
Okay.
Again, doesn't always work out that way, but like today I tasted, I think, 10 wines before noon and then didn't take any appointments in the afternoon because I had some other things that I needed to handle. But it can be as little as 6. Sometimes it can be as many as 30 if I don't plan my calendar.
Do you have to push back? Are there more wines and distributors that they want you to taste than you have time?
Yes. I get, we're lucky. We have 3 restaurants, and a lot of people want you know, want to reach out and want to have their wines in the restaurants. And I,
it's important to them to be on your list.
Of course.
You know, and, you're one of those restaurants.
And I try to be very polite about it. It's not always feasible to work. It's not feasible to work with everyone. But I do like to give everyone a chance. Sometimes, right, though, that might take, it might take a couple months before I have room. Not just because it's not about time as much as it's about, I don't want to waste your time.
Right.
I don't want to waste my time tasting if I have zero intentions or even availability, right, to.
But you
to
never know where that guy's going to wind up either.
Yeah, totally. So I try to taste all the time.
All right. So on an average night during service, how many different wines will you serve and taste?
I mean,
you look at your selection and you know, yeah, how many selections you have. I mean, how deep do you go each night? Not exact numbers, but...
It's kind of like a crapshoot a little bit. Like, I worked lunch today in Brooklyn and tasted 5 or 6 wines.
Okay. Lunch is a little lighter.
Yeah. But, you know, it's still kind of fun that people want to come and have a boozy lunch. On the weekends, or, you know, Thursdays and Fridays, and sometimes if I'm there on Saturdays, it can be a lot of wine, like,
right, 20, 30.
Yeah. We always taste everything when it's open, regardless if it's wine by the glass.
So you'll open the bottle, mm-hmm, you'll throw it in a glass,
yep,
before the customer. Do you, yep, open it in front of the customer, mm-hmm, or you do it separately?
We don't. We open everything away from the table.
Is that ever an issue?
Not an issue. It was an issue, I guess, with, you know, that we didn't do that before I started. So getting to that was a process. But,
okay,
you know, the idea isn't that we want to taste it for our own just,
no,
like,
no,
pleasure.
No, no, I know,
you
know? That. Yeah, you want to make sure you're serving, you,
yeah,
know, the provenance and everything is fine.
Yeah, I don't want people to drink cork bottles. It's gross.
I was just going to ask you, how often do you come across a cork bottle? Is it 1 in 10, 1 in 20? I mean, what's your feeling on that? What do you think it is?
It doesn't happen all that often, but it happens. I don't.
Nights go by where you don't hit a cork bottle.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean,
oh, that's great.
2 weeks could go by before,
okay,
you hit a cork bottle.
Okay, that's good to hear. You know, because you hear things like 1 in 10.
Yeah, I don't. I think it's kind of silly to put a number on it because,
yeah,
it's not really how it
I'm
works.
I'm happy to hear that. I'm happy that our audience hears that. You know, at a busy restaurant like,
yeah,
that, there's no. All right, what percentage of people tip you guys, you and your staff, off the menu, which is to slip you a 5, a 10, or whatever? Is it that type of restaurant, or not really?
Not really. And I don't work on, like, I'm not in the tip pool, so,
right,
I don't really pay attention to.
But is there some of that?
If it is, it's not in front of me. I'm,
okay,
I'm not,
so there's no, in certain restaurants, there's no pressure.
Yeah,
you know,
totally,
where you got, you know, because what's it going to do? Yeah,
right, yeah,
in other restaurants.
Yeah, I don't. I'm sure it happens in the Michelin star restaurants.
Yeah,
where you're taking care of, you know,
I guess,
some guy. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the guy pulls something.
It's happened
out
to me a handful of times in my career here,
okay,
in New York.
All right, couple more questions. Toughest part of the job as a somm, easiest or enjoyable part of the job?
The toughest part is, you have, as a sommelier especially, you have to stay ahead of everything.
Give me an example.
Well, you know, if you know that you're going to have a busy week because you have a busy reservation book, you know that you have to order accordingly. You know that in order to order accordingly, you have to have organization in your wine cellar. Your wine list have to be printed. Your staff has to be up to date. So being a day ahead of everything is extremely important. And that's a lot of the reason why I moved to being in the restaurants Monday through Friday, because I come in Tuesday and I'd be in the weeds from the minute I walked,
right,
in the door.
Right. You sound very organized.
I try to be. It's important.
Wait, so that's the toughest part.
Yeah.
To do it and execute it. But
yeah,
it's also the right thing. What's the easiest part?
The easiest part for me is working the floor.
That's enjoyable.
Yeah, but
that's your mojo. You're with,
well,
people.
Yeah, totally. I like to talk to people. Otherwise I'd be like, I don't know, an accountant or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, people who are in that business,
yeah,
you know, want the adrenaline,
yeah,
the,
totally,
action.
It's a rush.
Yeah.
It's totally a rush.
I agree with that. All right, last question. What does a John Patterson do after a busy service to unwind?
There's three possible scenarios.
Okay. I'm willing to hear all of them.
So If I'm working in Brooklyn and I want to like maybe stick around the restaurants because I like to actually hang out where I work, not all the time, but I'll have a Volksbier, Helles. It's a brewery down the street. I really like
Wait,
the beer.
Wait, Volksbier is the name of the
yeah,
beer?
Yeah, Volksbier is the brewery.
And the brewery's in Brooklyn?
Yeah, it's on Laqueer Street.
F-O-L-K-S-B-I-E-R?
Yeah.
Brooklyn Brewery. What type of beer is it?
It's also, the one I particularly like is Helles Simple, and it's a Munich.
Spell it.
H-E-L-L-E-S. That's like Helles? The style. It's like a Munich-style right. lager. And it's that's the beer. It's super simple. It's really crisp. It's super delicious. It's... I don't know.
So that's one way. You got more?
Yeah, two is to go home and make a Negroni.
Okay.
And chill out on the couch and listen to music.
So a Negroni, right?
Yeah, and then three is Tacos El Bronco way down.
Is that a place?
Yeah, it's like open all hours of the night.
Do you bring wine or
no,
does he have?
I usually just go just and eat. I'll pick it up and take it home. Or
Taco El Bronco.
It is...
Where is it exactly? Not address, but what part?
I think it's on. It's in Sunset Park.
Sunset Park.
South Brooklyn. So okay. Like, you know, 4th Avenue.
All right. So there you go. That's what a busy, well thought out little snapshot into what he does during the week.
Yeah.
All right. So, John, you've worked in fine dining, uh-huh. Nomad. You're now in, is it fair to say, high-end casual dining?
Sure. I mean,
what do you call it? Yeah. Is there?
To be honest, I think you can just say it's casual dining myself, okay. But yeah.
As far as wine, mm-hmm. let's not talk about the food or even the decor. As far as wine, what are the differences and similarities in fine dining and casual? I know the obvious one is the list.
Sure.
You talked about a little before. Well, what right. else?
I think number one, expectation. When you go to a fine dining restaurant, you expect that you're going to be given a book, maybe, or a big list, like we mentioned. You expect a sommelier. You expect the best glassware and blah, blah, blah. Not that we don't offer that in our restaurants,
right.
But we, and what really, like, appealed to me the most about where I now work is we take ourselves seriously, but not too seriously.
Right.
Our goal, just like with any other restaurant in America, is to totally... just blow the roof off of expectations.
So there's certain boxes you have to check in fine dining.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But there are many things you could do in casual dining.
Yeah.
Where you fulfill unexpected expectation yeah. in a way.
Well, you know, it's like silly things that we do in our...
Are you the guy that has to have a coaster for the bottle? Is
yeah,
that you?
That's literally...
Is that,
so that's
is
like
that
a little
like
thing.
Is that not a normal thing at casual dining?
I mean, maybe it's becoming more normal.
Right, right.
But
you're nuts if you don't put a bottle of wine on a coaster.
I get upset. You know, we have wooden tables. They make marks.
What's the downside? Nice. You get a little ring on the tablecloth? Or the table?
Yeah, and then I got to have somebody get the Murphy's oil. And
but it's presentation.
Scrub.
It's the right way.
It's just about... showing, again, it kind of goes back to what I was saying about, you know, me being in this position, and it shows that there's somebody who's putting thought to it. So these little details that I scrutinize and the staff scrutinizes, it at least shows the guest that there's thought. It's not just wine's on a shelf, you order it, we pull it from the
right.
shelf, and we open it.
Give me another pet peeve.
Serviettes are like a big thing for me.
What is that?
It's the little cloth that you keep. You know, most people have like two of them, and it's so that when you're pouring wine, you swipe you, or
right.
you little wipe the rim. So,
there's no
drips
on the exactly. bottle edge
yeah.
or down the label or whatever.
Yeah.
So serviette is really just the name for a fancy napkin.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
We have right. to be fancied somehow. That's
right. Do you? Is there a preference you have? I mean, they're both cool and fun. I mean, I may be able to answer your question. If you could take casual dining and add the things that are important to make it a great experience, that's just as fun, right?
Yeah, totally.
Which is what you do.
Yeah.
I mean, because you're aware of all of that.
Sure. I think it's important to have the fine dining aspect so you can see how you literally will scrutinize every minute detail.
Right.
And then you take it into a restaurant like Frankie's, for example, and okay, this is realistic, this is not realistic, and then you pick those things apart, and then you see what makes sense for the restaurant, because not all of those details make sense, but more importantly, they're not all possible. In fine dining, for the most part,
right.
your options are endless because you have money. It's a different, you can spend these expenses because then you can then charge for them. You can't really do that in small business.
You know, I'm a pretty good consumer. I crave that sometimes, but certainly not all the time.
No,
you know, it's too much.
Yeah, absolutely. All
right, so you run the wine program for the Frankie Spontino Group, which is really three different restaurants. Prime Meats, Frankie's 457 in Brooklyn, and Frankie's 570 in the Village. So let's start with, describe the overall vibe of, you know, the Frankie's restaurant group. I mean, not mission statement, but vibe.
Sure. We want to be the best neighborhood restaurants that we can possibly be.
Okay.
That's like what we go for. We want you, if you live in the neighborhood, we want you to crave coming to the restaurant. We want you to come in. We want you to feel good. We want you to hopefully be recognized. We want you to know that if you know Prime Meats for the hamburgers, let's say, that every time you come in, you can rely that it will be the exact same. It'll be equally as delicious. And that we want to provide the best, most comforting, amazing atmosphere that we can. And hopefully the food, the service, and the wine, and the other beverages
From what I know and experience, you know, I think you do that.
And we certainly try very hard.
All right, so quickly tell me about each restaurant and the wine. So let's start with Frankie's in Brooklyn, 457, the most Italian.
Yep. So that's the only restaurant where the entire list, with the exception of Champagne, is all Italian.
Okay.
So there's no French wine. There's a couple of American producers that I really like that make Italian varietals, or grow Italian varietals, rather, in their respective places.
And you go all over Italy.
Everywhere.
You know, it's not just Piedmont and Tuscany.
No,
those are Sangiovese and Nebbiola are popular, but Sicily.
We cover. I don't cover everything to cover everything. I cover everything where I think it makes sense, and I think there's some native varietals in Italy that are amazing, and there's some that suck.
All right, so a quick segue is we're going to taste the wine for the weekly wine sip, but I asked if you wanted to bring a wine, and no pressure, please do it. And while we're talking about Brooklyn and the Italian wine list, you brought in, what are we sipping here?
Yeah, so this is technically it's a non-vintage wine, but in this case it's all from 2014. It's Fabio Zambolin,
and he Zambolin.
Zambolin.
Okay, he's the winemaker. That's the winery.
He's the winemaker, and the name of the wine is called Feldo.
F-E-L-D-O. Feldo.
Yeah, and so it's named after his grandfather. It's from Alto Piemonte, specifically from La Sona.
So Alto Piemonte. Piemonte is the home of Barolo Barbaresca, but Alto is higher.
A lot of people maybe don't realize, Barolo and what we call the Langhe are in the southern part of Piedmont that almost go to like Liguria. Like Cinque Terre is probably the most common place associated there. So in the northern part of Piemonte, Nebbiolo is still very widely planted, but they also have native varietals like Croatina, Vespolina, Erbaluce.
Of which they'll blend in the Alto Piemonte that you won't see.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you'll see some monovarietal bottlings. But anyway, this wine is super approachable.
Available at the restaurant.
It's available in the restaurant.
Wine stores are hard to come by? It's a restaurant wine.
He didn't make that much of it, but I think it's around for sure.
Okay.
And it's Nebbiolo from old vines that are about 60 to 70 years old. That's counts for a third. Then Croatina and Vespolina. And all of the wine, what's unique about this, all come from within the zone of La Sona, which is probably one of the more well-known appellations in Alto Piemonte.
All right, I'll post it on our social media, so if people are interested.
Yeah, it's super good.
Let's move along. So that was Frankie's in Brooklyn. Italian food, predominantly Italian. John takes it all over Italy. Now you move into the West Village, Frankie's 570. You now have the opportunity to spread your wings a little, get away from Italian. So what do you do there?
So it was all Italian when I took over. Got rid of that. The varietal, or the wines, rather, on the list, when they're Italian, they tend to be more of the more well-known regions and varietals. Of course, Sangiovese and Nebbiolo, but you know, you'll see some Frappato. There'll be other Piedmont varietals, Dolcetto.
Frappato is Sicilian?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And Sagrantino and Montepulciano, et cetera.
So the best examples of some of the best regions outside of Tuscany and Piedmont.
And the food, I should note, at 570 in the West Village is very different than 457 in Brooklyn. The menus are not identical. And
less traditional? More...
Yeah, it's a little fresher. We have a bigger kitchen there. We can do more things. So the wine list reflects that. And then we venture into France a good bit. We have a little bit of Germany and Austria, and then...
French is, a quarter of the list? More or less?
Yeah, maybe a little more than that, especially when it comes to white wine. There's a lot of French wine.
And before we move to prime meats, if you had to pin down the French, where is most of the wine from? I think it's spread out, right?
You can't just say
Loire or Burgundy.
Yeah,
it's all regions represented.
Yeah, it's pretty spread out among... the regions that are represented.
All right, so the final restaurant is Prime Meats.
Yeah.
And tell me about that wine.
Prime Meats is everything except Italy.
Favorite wine, Gamay, right?
Yeah, there's a whole... I just put it on the list last week. There's a whole section of Gamay now.
Okay.
So
Very juicy, delicious wine.
Yeah, and very...
Good for that type of restaurant.
Exactly. Super appropriate with the food. You know, forget the fact that it's arguably one of the best values in wine, but... The list is very French heavy.
What I noticed, in prime meats, you think of a steakhouse and there's enough meat offerings. I saw a decent amount of whites, Chenins and Champagnes.
Yeah.
French, but
sure.
You don't think of that.
I
like that. Balls.
I'm a firm believer that you should drink Chablis 365. So, there's a lot of white wine on the list, but it's there for a reason. It works really well, aside from my palate and my preference, but it does work with a lot of the food.
But, I haven't been there, but I've looked at the menu, and it's not like a steakhouse with
steak
and chop.
It's not like cream spinach.
It's a pretty eclectic menu,
totally.
Those selections fit in.
And it changes a little bit more than it used to, because, again, a year ago we brought on a new executive chef for the company, and there's a little bit more attention in the kitchens at all the restaurants.
All right, so we're going to break in a couple of minutes, but before we break, we're going to do the wine list and have a bunch of other questions for you. Frankie's in Brooklyn's predominantly Italian, so I have the opportunity to ask you, tell me about some other wines and regions that are exciting or exciting you in Italy or have been, for a little while.
Yeah.
Drop some knowledge on my listeners.
To some people,
Alto Piemonte, we'll take that, but keep going.
But so this is maybe not the most uncommon place, but it's, I think, a more uncommon place for the average consumer, and that's Chianti Classico, specifically Classico.
What's the difference between Chianti Classico and Chianti?
In the most simplest of terms, think of Tuscany as a bullseye.
Okay.
Think of Chianti as an outer ring.
Okay.
And think of Chianti Classico as the bullseye. It's the geographical center of Chianti, the region. There's more regulations, if you will, from the Consorzio, which is the government ruling agency, whatever you want to call it.
And that's good stuff.
I think that some of the producers in Chianti Classico are making some of the most compelling wines on the planet, and it's unfortunate.
What are we talking price-wise?
I mean, they range, but I mean... You can find them for under $20, and you can spend as much as $100.
Right.
And it's not, I should say, too, it's not just Chianti Classico specifically, but there's many producers who don't follow the Consorzio for political reasons or whatever their reasons
may be. But are making
be.
Some slamming wines.
Yeah. I mean, you look at Montevertine, for example. I think it's one of the most iconic producers in Italy. And they're in Rada and Chianti, in the heart of Chianti Classico.
Montevertine is M-O-N-T-E-R...
Montevertine. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay. Give me one more. So you got Chianti Classico.
I just got back from Friuli.
Okay.
There's
mostly whites?
A lot of white wine. There's some red wine. Yeah, it's okay. But specifically, there's a small part of Appalachian Carso that is on the border of Slovenia. And what they call the political border, which Italy and Slovenia is split, but the region overlaps the two. And there's some really, really, spectacular wines coming from that region. they tend to be a little more, I don't want to use the word eclectic, but maybe not for the average consumer, but if somebody's right. looking for something that they want to like find and taste, and it's different.
So Friuli on the border of, what'd you say, Slovenia?
Slovenia, yeah. So
and what Carso is what?
K-A-R-S-O. It's an appellation.
Okay. So the Carso appellation
yeah.
in Friuli. I'll post that
even
too.
Even the wines that go into Slovenia, there's some really, really, really cool wines.
Yeah. That's a hot region now. All right. Before we break, let's move outside of Italy, and you get one choice for this answer. What other wine or region is exciting you outside of Italy?
This is going to be the most unoriginal answer on the planet, but
there's no unoriginal answers. Just, you boring lout.
Just unoriginal people.
Go ahead. Right.
I love Chablis.
Chablis.
I really do.
Okay.
I think
why
for me, Chablis shows what, you know, also you see in Burgundy, but it shows the versatility of Chardonnay. I think Chardonnay is one of, if not the most versatile wine on the planet. Champagne, you look at Chablis, you look at right. Burgundy, et cetera. But there's something about Chablis, from the basic Petit Chablis, village level Chablis, to the Premier Cruz and the Grand Cruz, that
is Petit Chablis village Chablis, or those are two different
things? They're two different designations.
And those are lower designations.
Yeah,
like you can get really good value wine
Absolutely.
Chablis.
Yeah, I mean, there's some Petit Chablis.
Give me one or two makers in those Petit or Village that are...
So Domaine Servan makes
S-E-R-V-A-N?
V-I-N.
V-I-N. Domaine Servan.
Makes a Petit Chablis called Sur Les Clos.
Okay.
And what's neat about that particular
S-U-R.
Wine...
S-U-R... L-E-C-L-O-S?
Yep.
Sur Les Clos. Okay.
And Les Clos is one of the most well-known Grand Crus in Chablis. It makes very powerful but really, really pretty wines. So Sur Les Clos is like right above it or on it.
Cool.
And it's Petit Chablis designation.
What are we talking price-wise?
You could probably buy it for $20.
Wow. So that's a killer glass of wine.
Yeah, and the unfortunate part about it is they've been, they've had a lot of very bad weather in the last couple of years. So,
tough vintages.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that wine for the next vintage for 2016 doesn't exist.
Right.
And I haven't checked for 17, but.
So it's kind of Chablis,
boring. Yep.
There's good value in the Petite and in the Village.
Yeah, it varies. It does. I would say it varies a lot from producer to producer.
Right.
But you can find some really good
but
values.
But that's true.
It's true any region.
You know. Yeah.
I mean.
I mean, if you put your head into it, you'll find
totally.
Good
but
opportunities.
You look at the way Burgundy is moving, and you know, there's not a lot of land. It's not getting any bigger, and the prices
right.
Continue to rise. So it's right. fine. It's nice to see some form of technically Burgundy.
That's a good choice.
Yeah, totally.
I think people always need to be reminded that Chablis is a great choice,
yeah,
and Champagne.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
In a separate thing.
Chablis doesn't necessarily mean Paolo Rossi in the jugs.
No. All right, John, we're going to take a break. I've neglected to tell you that I've been talking to John Patterson. He's the wine director at the Frankie Spontino Group. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to subject John to the wine list. We're going to taste some wine, and I have a few more questions for him. So you're listening to The Grape Nation. We'll be right back.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods Market believes in seeking out local, fresh, and seasonal food, and in supporting local farmers, makers, and the community as a whole, economically and agriculturally. Whole Foods Market believes in food that is vivid and colorful, fresh and full of nutrients. Food that connects you to your body, the seasons, and to nature. Food that helps you do more, sleep better, and wake up happier. Found in over 400 locations throughout the United States, Whole Foods Market only sells food that meets their standards, which means no artificial colors, flavors, preservatives, or sweeteners, ever. Whole Foods Market believes in real food. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com or download the Whole Foods Market app to learn more.
All right, we're back. We're back with my guest, John Patterson. John runs the wine program at the Frankie Spontino Restaurant Group. There's Frankie's in Brooklyn, Frankie's in the West Village, and Prime Meats in Brooklyn. All right, John, a couple more questions, then we will do our wine list, and then we'll taste the little wine. All right, so tell me why you like Gamay so much.
because, first and foremost, it's delicious.
It's a delicious wine. Not every wine is delicious. There's a delicious factor.
It's a number of reasons. One, I think that you can, if you taste enough Gamay and you drink enough Gamay, and I find myself drinking it often, you can really see the difference.
So it's just back up.
Gamay is the varietal. It comes from
Beaujolais, which is
grown,
part.
It's grown all over, but specifically, I guess I should back up. Specifically, I'm referring to Beaujolais.
Right.
Beaujolais, technically part of the Rhone department, but is a part of Burgundy for the sake of wine discussion, rather. And there are crew villages, Morgon, Fleury.
This is not the stuff that comes out every Thanksgiving. These are well-crafted wines.
This is not Nouveau.
Beaujolais.
These wines...
So get that out of your mind.
Yeah, exactly. This is not stuff that you'll see at the gas station.
Right.
But they, as a region, provide the best, like, price...
Value to quality.
Yeah, and you know, they're
what
not...
What is the grape?
The grape is Gamay.
Gamay, right.
Gamay is the grape. So...
And most of the crews, I think there's 10 appellations or something, are 100% Gamay? Or
always,
they
always 100% Gamay. Okay. The only varietals that you can plant in Beaujolais are Gamay and Chardonnay and label them as Beaujolais. But obviously, if it's Chardonnay, it's Beaujolais Blanc.
And they're great food wines.
They're amazing food wines. So at Prime Meats specifically, we like the wines because they're great with sausages. That's a big part of our restaurant. They're great with all things pork.
Right.
And they're also great for a little bit of a chill, and you want to sit outside and just slam a bottle of wine. I like Beaujolais as a region and Gamay as a grape because the wines can be serious, but you don't have to think about them. Right. You know, I think that's important. You want to think about wine sometimes, but other times you just want to drink it.
Right. I'm on a mission to get more people to drink Gamay. I think my listeners don't know enough about it.
Well, it's like Chianti Classico, kind of gets a little bit of a bad rap for reasons that, you know, whatever.
All right, so go out and look for some Gamay.
Yeah, totally.
It's a good food wine. All right, Frankie's in Brooklyn does a very cool thing. They partnered with Resy, the online reservation service, and they created a series, which you're coming to the end of special dinners. Tell me quickly, you know, what they were and are. I know
So we partnered with Resy, Whole Foods, American Express, and Sonos to basically bring chefs from all across the globe to do what we're calling the Frankie's Backyard series.
Of which is a beautiful open space.
Yeah, I mean, in the backyard at Frankie's is insane.
Which is a whole nother reason to check that place out, right?
Yep, totally, and you should do it before it gets cold.
Right.
So we set the backyard up. We do a 5-course meal. First course is like canapes and that kind of stuff, and then 4 seated courses. We do a cocktail. We do wine. It's not a formal dinner. It's family style.
Right.
And
it's long tables out in the back under the lights.
Yep. And it is.
And you pair the wines.
Yeah.
And
we don't do like a formal, you know, this wine with this course, this wine with this course. We do. I pick wines based on the menu of what I think will work through the progression of the meal. And what's amazing about it is you get to have chefs that, you know, Mauro Colagreco from France, 2 Michelin star chef. You go to his restaurant in the south of France, it's tasting menu or it's a thing. So now we had him come with Fernando Troca from Argentina, and they cook basically the best backyard barbecue type meal. And then
those guys are like the masters at the barbecue.
Totally. So it's a lot of fun to get to eat the food of these chefs that a lot of people, myself included, you know, only read about.
You did Joe Beef from Montreal.
Yeah, that
very
was
very famous.
That was an incredible incredible.
That was the most recent one. Are there any left?
So we have one left on the 16th.
And
that'll
is?
Complete the series. So Chris Bianco from Arizona.
The pizzeria.
Pizza Wizard, yeah.
Pizzeria Bianco.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's probably the greatest and best pizza outside of New York and maybe rivals.
I have never gotten to go, so I'm
well, you get to
crossing
taste it
my
here.
Fingers that he wants to cook some pizza.
Is that sold out?
They are. It is sold out. And then right. the team from Cosme is also going to cook as well.
So. Oh, boy. That's a pretty good setup.
Yeah, it should be a fun evening.
So if people, you know, in the future want to look out for that, they should go on the Frankie's website. What's the best way to track that
stuff? The best way to do it is to go directly to Resy. And on Resy's website, okay. There's like a blog.
So it's definitely a Resy thing.
Yeah, yeah. And so Resy handles all of the tickets.
It's, I like
it makes it.
That.
It's great. And it's $100 all in, which is, I think,
wow.
Steal of the century.
That is the steal of the century. All right. So that's the Resy Frankie Dinners in Brooklyn. Very, very cool. All right. Before we get to the wine list, I'd mentioned in the intro that the best thing to pair with fish is probably weed. And what I'm alluding to is not fish the food, but fish the band. I just want to ask John quickly why wine people and sommeliers have such an infatuation with fish. I have to disclaim that my middle son has been to twice as many concerts as John, and John's been to about 60. So what's the fascination with you, and why are there so many wine guys there?
Sommeliers have a taste for excellence. That's why.
Okay. So that band, yeah. I think it's more like they're eclectic, they're crazy, they're all over the place, and they're very cool.
Well, I mean, I guess disclosure, I was way more into fish before I was into wine, but.
That's right.
You know, I really don't know.
You told me off air that you started listening to Three or something.
When I was third grade.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I really don't understand.
You don't have to, because that's a band that, you know, it's a very unique band in that sense.
Well, you either get it or you don't. And
the whys, you don't have to answer.
Yeah, and I don't need to explain it to anybody.
You don't have to.
Well, you can't explain it to anybody either. That's the frustration, because then they just think you're a dork.
So. You don't have to. So that's what pairs with fish. All right. So, John, every week we subject our guests to the wine list. It's a bunch of questions that, you know, delves into your personal taste, gives our audience a chance, you know, to hear what the professionals are drinking and doing. So the first question is, what are you drinking now? You know, what are you experimenting, tasting? Is it seasonal? You know, what's on your table?
It changes up a lot, to be honest with you.
So I'm talking now.
Yeah, so I think you want to, let's see, maybe the last thing I had.
Well, but something where you've repeated, like, I tried this, I got to try it again, or different producers. Anything happening? Or
I wouldn't say that there's. So I confession, I'm not exactly like, I'm not the guy who's like going after, like, I want to find the next thing to be like, I found it first, because I don't. That's not really.
I'm out of my seat getting more wine. I'm not alluding to that. But what are you tasting now?
It's the season. I've been waiting for it all year long to drink more Italian wine. When it's cold outside, I want to drink more Italian
wine. So we're shifting into the Italian wine season. Yeah. Break that down for me, and we'll move to the next question. What? Everything, something, where?
Barolo, Nebbiolo, all things Nebbiolo.
Okay.
All things Piedmont. It's just there's something about the fall, the leaves changing color, and the weather getting a little more crisp that I want to drink more Italian.
I'm with you on Barolo. I think Barolo is underrated, and I think it's an incredible value, and the guys that are making it compared to other wines, the pricing is great. All right, John Patterson's personal favorite wine and food pairing.
Chablis and oysters. I'm a sucker for the classics.
You are a sucker for the classic.
I'm like,
so if I came over there and put you in a headlock and said that's the classic answer, what's the second best answer? And I agree with that.
It's equally as classic.
What? Go ahead.
Sauvignon
and
Comté.
Okay, first time ever on this show.
Really?
Now,
I feel like that's the most unoriginal.
No, it's a classic, but let's talk about that. So Sauvignon is a white wine.
Sauvignon.
Sauvignon. Sauvignon.
Sauvignon, yeah.
Right.
From the Jura.
Mm-hmm. And Comté is one of the world-class cheeses from the Jura. And together, they complement each other.
They do. I got engaged in the Jura.
You did?
Like, I guess maybe 5 years ago. And my wife and I had a lunch with Stéphane Tissot, and we
Tissot's one of the great winemakers.
Yeah, absolutely. And he pulled like different. So there's, you know, Comté for every season over there, and then different
ages.
And then we had like Vangeon and Chateau Chalon, but we also had fresh like Ouillet Sauvignon. It's I don't know. There's nothing. It's like foie gras and Sauternes for some people.
Yeah. Just so you know, that's the first time anybody said Sauvignon.
Well, I feel original
and
for the first time all
Well,
year.
No, I think it's a great... I'm glad I forced you to a second answer. Outside of Frankie's, your favorite wine restaurant and slash or bar, a place that has a lot of attention towards the wine list, the service, just the whole wine vibe. Not your favorite restaurant, but your favorite wine restaurant, wine bar, wine restaurant.
I don't go often because it's out of my radar, but I love it. I think the Modern Bar Room is arguably one of the best places to drink wine in New
York City.
That's
Michael Engelman?
Yeah.
Okay. Michael's going to be on the show in January.
Oh, great. Yeah, he's a good friend of mine, but so shameless plug in that regard. But
It's just a great restaurant with great wine service.
The wine service is top-notch. The wine list is insane, and their hospitality included. So
right, that's the high end of all of that.
Yeah, but the wine prices are bananas. They're so great.
They are.
They're amazing, and you can drink.
Here's a Danny Meyer restaurant, fancy place, but a well thought out wine list by one of the true wine pros,
sure.
And it's reasonable.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a great answer. Mm-hmm. All right, do you have a favorite all time wine? Or a couple? I mean, is there something that was a oh wow moment or resonates or a birth wine? I mean, can you think of something?
For me, it's very in the moment, and it's all about multiple elements, not just the wine itself. But one wine that I keep like resonating back to was my wife and I had a couple years ago. Not necessarily the most fanciest wine on the planet, but
doesn't have to be.
2008, Vincent Dauvisat, Chablis Grand Cru Les Prus.
So Dauvisat, Dauvisat.
Yep.
One of the great Chablis makers.
Yeah, but Vincent Dauvisat specifically.
Who's the famous one?
Vincent Dauvisat.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Vincent Dauvisat, and it was the Chablis?
Grand Cru from Prus.
What year was it?
2008.
Okay, and it was one of those.
It was just...
Just everything.
Everything.
The wine,
was
the time, the company.
Everything was perfect.
Okay. That's a good answer. You know, Dauvisat's one of the great Chablis makers.
I mean, full disclosure, I'm obsessed with Dauvisat. I love it. It's my favorite Chablis producer, and I drink it.
Is it on any of the lists?
Yeah, there's a good bit of it at Primates.
Okay. So when somebody orders that, you make sure the bottle's not corked.
Confirmed. Right? Yeah, exactly.
All right. You'd be good at answering this. Best wine around $15 retail, 15 plus. Recommend a red and a white. You can get specific. You can give me regions. I always say this. My kids are in their 20s. They're starting to make money. They're going to dinner parties. They don't want to bring a crappy bottle. They can't afford an expensive. But they want to impress.
Right. If it's red, there's one that always comes to mind. I personally grab it anytime I see it. And that's from Berlotto that is in Verduno. Which
B-U-R-L-O-T-T-O. Berlotto.
Yep. And it is their...
What region of Italy is it?
It's within the Lange, specifically.
Okay.
It's within Barolo, but it's not
Barolo
Nebbiolo.
Barolo's a great winemaker.
Yeah, it's one of the best.
Right.
So they make a wine called Varietals Pellaverga.
Spell.
Oh, God. I can't.
Your best. I'll look it up, but...
It's P-E-L-A-V-E-R-G-A.
And that's the wine varietal?
Yep.
Okay.
And it's probably $20 on the shelf.
Okay.
It may be maybe a dollar or two more.
So that's a killer red.
Yeah, it's just super easy to drink. It's not pretentious. It's good with a little bit of a chill. It has complexity, and it's fun to drink, and it's not flimsy, but you can slam it if you want to.
First time ever. All right, give me a white.
If you were going to drink white, there's... We've worked with it in the restaurants before. I was like, I'm very indecisive.
It's okay. It's your last time ever on this show.
Yeah, right. There's a producer in the very southern part of France in the region of Chiro. Where spell they, it. Ciro is the region is C-I-R-O.
Ciro.
And the producer is Scala, S-C-A-L-A. And the label's really pretty, so it'll catch your eye. But it's 100% Greco. Like I said, from Ciro, it's probably not even $15.
Wow.
And it is just, I think, from Ciro, and Ciro, again, a place where they make way too much wine, and a lot of it's really bad. This is kind of that diamond right. in the rough, if you will.
That's a first time also.
And it's very, very good.
I will post those.
Yeah.
So
please do. You can find them.
The reason I ask you is because I know you come across, and I want my listeners to have an opportunity.
Yeah.
All right. So those were John Patterson from Frankie Spuntino's recommendation. All right. We're going to end the show with our final segment. It's the weekly wine sip. Every week we taste a different wine on air. For our weekly wine sip this week, We've been sipping John's wine, which we'll talk about a little more. And we're going to taste a 10-year-old 2007 Nippozzano Chianti Reserva from the Chianti Rufino region of Italy. The wine is from an 11th century Castello di Nippozzano estate. That's the home of the Frescobaldi family, a famous winemaking family. It's predominantly Sangiovese with a touch of Malvasia Nero, Cab, and Merlot. This wine in current vintages, the reason I brought it in is it's a relatively inexpensive wine. It's $18 to $23, and it's available at better wine stores. It's generally rated as a 90+. And I wanted to get John's expert opinion to see if this wine's any good, if it holds up after 10 years. So, John, let's pick up the Chianti, and let's evaluate it quickly. So, first, color. Yeah, typical 10-year-old Chianti color?
No, I think it's a little darker.
Darker?
Yeah, it's
not rusting or bricking or anything.
No, it's pretty concentrated. It's like
when you say darker, darker than typical?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, to me, Sangiovese is very red.
Right. Why is that? Is it this wine or the bottle age?
It's most likely the wine and the way that the wine was aged before it was bottled. And in addition, it's not just Sangiovese, like you said.
Right, it's a blend.
Yeah. Which personally I would say it's maybe not the most traditional example, but that doesn't mean anything.
Okay.
It's
my opinion. I didn't say I brought in a traditional. So that's the color, very dark, deep.
Yeah, it's like deep, dark.
Untraditionally, dark, dark.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go nose.
Spicy.
Spicy, I get some red, cherry, some black.
Yeah, totally. And there's definitely a, I don't know how this wine is aged, but there's an oak influence.
It's in my cellar, which is temperature controlled with great provenance. Okay? Is that what you were alluding to?
No. How do they... Does this sit in barrel? Does it sit here? Let's grab the bottle.
Let me see. I don't know if it says anything on it.
There's only one way to find out.
What does it say?
It just says basically everything that you just said. It doesn't say anything about.
Okay.
I'm sure we could probably look it up, but I bet you that this wine is put in some form of oak.
Okay, because you're picking that up?
I mean, it's
woody, vanilla, what?
It's not so vanilla, it just has the, toasted spice.
Right, okay. All right, so that's the nose. Let's go mouthfeel. Medium?
Yeah, it's not as heavy as I would have thought it would be.
Right, from the look, the color and all that.
Yeah.
So it's a medium, not even a medium plus body.
Yeah, I think medium is fair to say.
Anything else on the mouthfeel?
It's pretty youthful.
Okay.
I mean, especially if you...
For 10 years old?
10 years old. There's a little bit of alcohol.
Okay.
For me, it definitely kind of drives the finish.
Does alcohol usually tame after a few years or not? It should, right?
It should, yeah.
So it's still showing alcohol.
Yeah, let's see. I don't know how many degrees this is. Let's see.
So is that typically...
It says 13.5.
It plays higher, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, those lying bastards.
I don't know if I can call BS on this thing. But.
All right, let's go palate. What are we picking up on the palate and taste?
There's that red and dark fruit that you talked about.
I agree, red,
yep.
Cherry. I could pick up the spice on the palate, too.
It's not so, fresh and vibrant, especially if you, take a sip of the Feldo that's, crushed brambly fruit. This is more of a concentrated... I wouldn't say it's like a cooked fruit, but there's a density to it. You know?
Right. I know. I know what you're saying.
There's not a lot of acidity.
No. What about the tannins? They're smooth, right?
They're smooth. They're present.
Right.
medium.
All right.
I wouldn't say that they're overly aggressive, but they're definitely present.
All right, so two questions. Yeah. First question is, what would you pair this and Chiantis with?
This particular wine, you need something meaty. Like grilled lamb with herbs would be really nice.
Okay.
You could have a bisteca. That would also be delicious.
Okay.
You could even go more classic and have pasta, but you definitely need, like, you know, a ragu or something
some
rich.
Some kind of heavy, rich sauce.
But you could potentially get yourself into a little bit of trouble with pairing this with food if there's too much acidity, because this wine doesn't have a ton of it. So if you had simple tomato sauce, probably tastes bitter.
Okay. I brought this in because it's reasonably priced. It's readily available, 10 years old. Do we like this wine? We're honest here. Okay, like, love.
I don't like this wine.
You don't like this
wine. Sorry. Does that mean?
No. That's why, not at all. Why?
For me, this is an example of, I hope I don't offend anybody. If the Italians out there, please don't come out for me. What I like about Sangiovese, what I like about Chianti Classico, is there can be a liveliness and a freshness to the wines. Of course, more serious wines that see more oak and have intensity to them, you know, are going to have less of that freshness and more, complexity. But it just falls a little flat.
Right.
And I think that
let's pick up the Feldo.
Yeah, which is a totally different wine.
Yeah, different nose.
It's just the Feldo is not. I should also say, the Feldo is, by Italian definition, it's a table wine.
Right.
And it kind of is treated that way. It's great with lighter fare. It would get crushed by the same food you would put with
right.
this wine. Whereas this is a, you know, DOCG. It's a more...
Right. Typical Tuscan Chianti and all of that. All right. So that was the 2007 Nipizzano Chianti Reserva. I liked it a little more than John, but I didn't think it was great, and I get what he's saying, and, you know, that's why I brought it
in. If you put it in front of me, I would certainly drink it, but it's not...
Yeah.
I don't know that I would buy.
It's okay. I mean, I've had some bad wines on the show. It's not a bad wine. I mean, there's life short, and there's a lot of other options. All right, so thank you for being honest with that. John, we're going to wrap up the show. If you have a question, wine happening, or event, hit me up at sam@thegrapenation.com. That's sam@thegrapenation.com. My friend Hugh at Roberta's will be doing an orange wine event on Sunday, October 15th from 12 noon to 7 p. He'll have over 30 producers, including some real hard-to-find stuff. So if you don't know much about orange wine, you'll come here and you'll walk out of here an expert. Follow The Grape Nation on Facebook, at The Grape Nation. We'll post John's wine list. We'll post the wines that we drank on the site. Follow us on Instagram, SBenRuby, Twitter, BenRuby. And John, where can we find you and Frankie's on social media?
So Frankie's is at Franks, Franks dot PM.
PM.
And
that's all the restaurants.
Yep. And okay. Then I think my social media is at J Burns Patterson IV.
The fourth?
Yes. I'm a true Southerner.
All right. So John is an interesting guy to follow. He's pretty active. And if you want to see what's going on with the restaurants, you could follow Frankie's PM. All right, John, thank you for coming on. Thank you to our guest, John Patterson. John is the wine director at Frankie's Spontino Restaurant Group. Stop by and look for him at Frankie's in Brooklyn, Frankie's in the West Village, and Prime Meats. I want to thank our engineer, Vitor, as always, and everyone at the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sam BenRuby, and you've been listening to The Grape Nation.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community?
rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.